Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com with us for the next hour here on the program, talking all things Tennessee Titans. We welcome your questions for PK on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. PK, to quickly recap the Jacksonville game, there have been some bad performances all over the place for the Titans the last few years. That one was up there with any of them that you want to point to in terms of offensive output, in terms of yardage. Just absolutely miserable to watch, all of it. And not very many people were there in the game for all of it. What did you make of what felt like maybe some progress, specifically on the Cam Ward front against Seattle, and then totally just falling back to earth against Jacksonville?
Well, you know it's not going to be linear, but, I mean, to spike downward to that degree, just awful. And they look, I'm. It's rare that I'll say a team doesn't feel interested, but that team didn't feel particularly interested to me. There was no energy, no zip, no particularly on offense. I mean, the offense is just dead. Who can take this team? The quarterback can't do it. Cam Ward right now is not a I'll take you there caliber guy, given what he's surrounded by. Is there anybody on offense that can lift this team, give it the spark, give it the performance that's going to, lead it to something close to a win against a team like Jacksonville? I think the answer is no. Who is that guy? You know, the best players in offensive line, interior offensive linemen. Peter Skoronski can't do that. And who can? There really isn't anybody. And if there was, I'm not confident that the offensive coaching staff could set him up to do it anyway.
You know, it's interesting you said they weren't – I mean, I agree based on the performance. There were some guys pissed off afterward, though, right? So – I don't know. Is it the defense is more interested than the offense right now, and the defense is getting sick of how bad the offense is, or is it Mike McCoy is just grading on other people besides you?
Yeah,
to a large extent.
Well, clearly,
how do you read all that?
I mean, clearly, Mike McCoy hasn't. They're not doing it for Mike McCoy.
No,
they're not in.
Do
there
NFL
saying,
players do it for a coach?
Well, yeah, sometimes. I mean, when Mularkey took over, it was such a relief from Wisenhunt that they played better for Mularkey. You know, they gave him one big win right out of the gate. They played better the rest of the season for that. Better enough that it wasn't completely unreasonable for him to get the head coaching job. It was lazy for Amy Adams Strunk to hire him, but it wasn't.
It was actually a good hire.
It wasn't scandalous that he got it. So guys did rally around that to a degree. There's no hint of rallying around Mike McCoy. I think the players feel about Mike McCoy much like the media feels about Mike McCoy. Like, this guy isn't bringing us anything. He hasn't given us anything to latch on to.
So is that what those guys are talking about? Arden Key's like all this weird cryptic.
I don't know about Arden Key's cryptic stuff. It could be something completely minor. But it's certainly what Jeff Simmons is talking about. I mean, guys generally don't look five games ahead, and Jeff Simmons, one of his big messages was, hey, I know we've got to get through this season and everything, but when we do, boy, we sure need a coach who can provide some leadership and some culture.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty big call-out circa 2025 when guys tiptoe around everything and you're super conscious of not insulting anybody.
And even Cam. Like, Cam after the game about the fourth down stuff, I mean, he's a rookie quarterback that, frankly, I know he's the number one pick, but he's not accomplished anything in the league to this point. And I think in a lot of those situations, you would see the rookie quarterback when asked about,
defer.
He would defer, right? And he did not. He's like, oh, yeah, I tell him all the time, we need to go for it. Like, I found that pretty interesting, too, on the Cam Ward front of. He was not afraid to just – outright say, yeah, I talk to Mike all the time about going for it, and I guess we're just never going to do that.
Yeah.
If it was fourth and two, he'd have done it, though.
I mean, at some point, I expect Cam Ward to just put him in a headlock or something, and just, you know, like he's not a – I don't know. Like, is that more like – because Cam Ward, like in the future too, he's not going to have any problem coming at a coach or whatever, or is it just like because Mike McCoy is so trampleable. You know what I mean?
Well, on this, I'll say I think McCoy and Holtz have both handled this well. They say, we want guys that want to go for it all of the time and be aggressive. It's our job to rein things in and manage the game.
It's our job to coach like it's 1993.
Well, yeah. Right. But, I mean, it's sensible what they say. And McCoy has said, you know, Philip Rivers on a game day would be akin to that. And then he would come in on Monday and I'd say,
Dagnabbit!
I see why you did what you did. That, of course, that was the right thing. You know, I was emotional about it and you guys were more sensible about it. Now, say what you will about McCoy or whatever. Take McCoy out of it and put a normal coach in there and it makes sense. You know, now McCoy saying, 4th and 2, we were absolutely going, but you push us back 3 feet and there was a wall there that we just could never conceivably climb. And look, we're down at the 10-yard line. We'll be back. We'll be back. We're down there all the time. So we take 3 now and we'll be back. His thing about points, listen to the way, everybody out there, listen to the way he talks about points. He does not differentiate 7 from 3 at all. He just talks about points. Like all just points. We got points.
Points are points.
We got points are points. And he talks about them all like they're all the same.
Have you ever, you need to directly ask him.
Are you familiar with the difference between 7 and 4?
7. Hold up the signs. Yeah.
The 4 points.
Which one is bigger? 7 or 3?
It's a hopeless thing on the scoring.
More weeks of this stuff, PK.
They cannot score. And I mean, it's pretty funny. Nick Holtz yesterday, you know, asking him about the value of a win and finishing and everything. And he said, 34 days, 5 games.
He knows it. He's got 7 hours, 9 minutes.
Now, I think it turns out that he had just spoken to the offense about, you know, the time they had left to do something of influence. So he had the number that way. He's not necessarily crossing off days on the calendar.
One more day down.
In his office. Though, you know, who could blame him or anyone for
still
doing
the play
that?
Call?
Look, I encourage people to think this way. I wait all year for football season. I like football season. So it's a miserable season, and there will be some relief when it's over. But I still prefer football season to not football season. You know, so I'm not like, I can't wait until I get to February and sit and watch some college film and say, I wonder if they'll draft this guy out of the 300 guys they might draft. That's not fun for me. I know you guys don't like it either.
Oh, it's getting pretty
some
close
people
for,
like
it's getting
that
pretty close
stuff.
For me.
No, I know. Too many people.
The funny thing is,
I can't wait till we get the draft season.
In this performance, I actually thought it was probably like one of Tony Pollard's best game, you know, other than, you know, the fumble in the game. But, you know, 10 carries. 60 yards, and he was really good on the first drive, and then they just, like, abandoned him for a while, and then all of a sudden you turn around and you're down 2 scores, and the game is what it is.
Well, circumstances, if he's going to be good, it's going to be good on 10 carries, which is what he had here. First drive, he was great. I thought Levin was really doing some good work for Cushenberry at center. But then, I mean, they had two third down conversions the whole game. So there really isn't anywhere to give them the ball. Like the game had 4 3-and-outs, 5 punts. It was hard to look at it and say, like, well, they really should be feeding Pollard the ball here because they weren't in any situations where they sustain it. They just don't sustain any drives ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough, man.
it's real rough out there.
It's a toughie, I tell you what.
And now let's go to Cleveland, where sure it's going to be nice and warm.
Yeah, going back to your hometown, right? Weren't you born in Cleveland?
I was just in my homeland, New Jersey, and now I'm going to my birthplace. It's a real sentimental couple weeks for me.
That's very nice. Yeah, Miles Garrett, he needs 3.5, we determined, right? He needs 3.5.
3.5 to tie.
To tie the record.
He's at 19.
What's over-under for the game? 6?
We did have somebody ask yesterday, Will Myles Garrett have more sacks in this game than the Titans have points? Which I think is a fair question.
Well, they had more personal fouls than points in this last game, which is a really rare one. Could you have found the line on that?
That's amazing.
So offshore, certainly.
So let's talk about that. And, you know, apparently the Jacksonville punter was being mean out there to Titans players. What did you make of, I guess, just the verbal combat that Jacksonville was throwing the way of the Titans on Sunday?
It's ridiculous. Also, you know, Jeff Simmons kind of excused his personal foul because a guy hurled an insult at him. Like, this stuff is said. I'm sure Jeff says that on a pretty regular basis out there.
Lots of stuff flies out of Jeff's mouth.
Yeah,
when
I mean,
pissed at somebody.
There's stuff said out there constantly. It threatened to kill me. I mean, Chestnut didn't get a personal foul or anything, so I give him grace. Like, he got into a shoving match. Big deal. But that this was a news story that a guy threatened to kill him. I mean, I guess there should be a news story or four out of every game, because I'm with Liam Cohn. He says it's like normal trash talk. Yeah, that's normal trash talk. Also, they actually try to kill each other on the field. Like, you know, when the guy's got his elbow on your throat at the bottom of a pile, do you think he's like saying, "Hey, Merry Christmas"?
By the way, didn't Robert Saleh say something like, "I will destroy your entire existence," to Liam Cohen or something like that?
I think he said,
I will end your life.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and that's coaches who aren't in pads and helmets.
The Jags piss people off, I guess.
Guess
huh?
so, man.
More power to them. I mean, who thought the AFC South was going to get this incredibly interesting at the top? That's going to be a great little fight, of course, with the Titans
in a chair
over there as an observer.
Hey, guys!
I wonder who they'd like to see win this thing.
Jordan on the YouTube chat says, "I set a few rows off the Titans bench on Sunday. When it got to 18-3, my buddy yelled, 'Only five more field goals, Mike.'"
That would entail crossing midfield a couple of times.
Stretch that leg out, son. It's time to kick. I have a lot more PK coming up next, including his thoughts on J.C. Latham and where things stand on that front. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com with us for the rest of the show, talking all things Titans. PK, J.C. Latham, you know, it wasn't like it was some total disaster out there or he was just getting torched every play, but some snaps along the way on Sunday that have been basically what it's been from J.C. Latham, which is very inconsistent and just some bad snaps. And I mentioned this a little bit yesterday. Blake Bedingfield did a really interesting breakdown on Latham at PaulKuharski.com just about everything that he sees with Latham right now. So I ask you, what are you seeing with Latham? And at this point, you know, I'm not going to go out there and call him a bust or anything, but at this point I will ask, like, how concerned are we right now on the J.C. Latham front that there has not been more progress than we've seen to this point?
I mean, he's trending poorly. That's for sure. You know, a couple games ago I said, well, let's see him play these last seven games. Hopefully he finds his footing. Well, a couple games into that, he's not doing it. He doesn't anchor particularly well. There's a run play a game where he just, like, completely misses his guy who goes into the backfield and kills Pollard or Spears, where you're just like, what is he doing? And he's got like a clock in his head that tells him, like, all right, the ball's out or something's happened after, you know, 3 seconds, where he might look out over his shoulder to see what happened, but he's not pursuing his guy or doing anything. And his guy is chasing Cam or putting Cam on the ground or pursuing Cam on Cam's rollout. His guy is still very much involved in wreaking havoc on a play, and Latham has stopped. He's stopped playing. He feels like, all right, my guy wasn't involved in the first 3 seconds of that play. I'm good. It doesn't seem to understand the snap to the whistle kind of thing. And you want an offensive line, and this guy's supposed to be like fierce and mean, which means like you're an annoyance to your guy, like all the way until you're positive the play is over. And he just doesn't do that. So I think he's a lost cause for the remainder of this year. And then, as is the case with some of these guys, it's all about the new staff. And I don't necessarily think it's the new staff having to get through to the new to the guy. I think it's the new staff assessing whether they can get through to the new guy. And I think that's the case with him. I think that's the case with Tavondre Sweat. And that's a big challenge. Are those guys people the new staff can get through to and turn into what they're supposed to be? Or do the Titans have a couple more holes again that are a problem? And they can't have a hole at right tackle again.
Lost cause of this year is ridiculous. That can't happen. I mean, he needs to.
Oh, I agree. But it can't happen. But I think it's going to happen. I mean, who's getting through to him? How's it changing?
Well, but you know what?
It's screw, on him.
Screw,
I understand.
Yeah, screw getting through to
be
him.
A pro.
Like, figure out that, you know, like, you're like, well, there's a lot on the line.
I don't feel like he cares.
You don't think he cares?
I don't. I mean, I think he cares to a degree, but I don't think he understands what I'm talking about in terms of playing all the way through, and that this guy, you know, you might push him out wide and feel like he's done, but right, he's going to recover and continue to pursue, and you're responsible for checking on that.
So
I don't think he doesn't seem to get that.
Obviously, we've seen these examples of these plays, and they're bad. How frequent – I mean, I can't tell you. How frequent is – I mean, that's a loaf, basically, right? Is that chronic? Is that constant? Again, one's bad.
I'll put it to you this is what Blake Bedingfield said. Just I'll read a couple sentences of what he says. It says, Latham gave up power rushes, which he's built to handle. He also gave up pressures and tackles for loss in the run game. Latham is becoming a major liability who has lost confidence in himself. And he talks about some of this of – just not really hanging in there for the block part of it. So, like, it's something
that's an easy fix
that's coming up on film that he's seeing.
He sent me video. So he works on his piece Sunday night, and he sends me some notes while he's doing it. So he sent me video of a couple plays like the ones we're talking about, and he sent me a note with it. I could send you 10 to 15 of these. His guy makes a tackle from the backside. He hasn't blocked initially. So he's not saying 10 to 15 tackles, but he's saying he could send me 10 to 15 plays that he doesn't feel like.
That's a lot.
He's
doing, yeah. Especially considering the Titans don't have the ball that much.
Right. Like, the false starts are bad. I mean, I still think, like, when it comes down to it, I think the confidence just being a good player, that's what it's about. You know, that's what's the most important thing. That's something that, like, the rest of this year, like, you hear this.
But doesn't that kind of add up, though?
Is there nobody watching film and pointing these things out? I know Bill Callahan's not here anymore, but my God.
I would certainly think the two offensive line coaches are pointing this out.
They're still grading individuals, right?
But doesn't all that kind of add up to why?
It doesn't seem like it's getting through.
I mean, it seems like his teammates are calling him out, yeah, right? Like, doesn't all that kind of add up to being kind of a root of this problem here?
Yeah, and I'm just saying, yes, for sure. And so it's like just basic. It's just hard for me to believe this guy, as I think back on the draft process and coming in all this stuff, has turned into this. It's hard to buy.
It is hard to fathom. And you certainly hope that they can find something about him.
I mean, if you need a coach, this next coach can reach him. I mean, then
they're
screwed. Exactly,
yeah, they're totally screwed.
If you don't have that, if you don't have that drive inside yourself, you're out of this league.
This
league will chew you up and spit you out.
They may be screwed, but I mean, it's possible.
So you're saying draft a tackle in the first round? Let's get to the draft. No, I'm just kidding.
There may be, you know, certain kind of coach can relate to a guy in a certain kind of way and get through to him. I agree with you. It's a shame, and it's pitiful that that's necessary, right? He should be a seventh pick in the draft, should play well for anybody and understand what the job takes and be progressing. Given that that's not the case, now the next thing is, well, you hope that whoever's coming can find a way to push the right buttons. Shouldn't have to. But it's going to need to.
Is it the button where you hit G and move him to guard?
I sure hope not. I mean, but look, people
That's
are talking.
Big investment in those guards, baby.
People are talking right tackle. People are talking running back. I don't think you could spend value picks on that stuff when you've put other things on hold for as long as you have, starting with edge and receiver. You know, it's a merry-go-round of needs, but some of those things have to move to the front.
Oh, by the way, Myles Garrett's coming up this week. So whether it's Dan Moore or J.C. Latham, have fun with that.
Let's play six.
No tight ends going out in a route this week.
Yeah. Ollie Ugo
no backs.
Got to play. Like, eligible the whole game. Can you go up to the ref and rub your number and just say, hey, consider me in until I tell you I'm out?
I mean, I have no idea how they're going to block him. You know, people try to block him. It's not like the Titans are like, well, you know, well, let's just single – everybody singles him up and the Titans are going to double him. Like, people try to do all this stuff to Myles Garrett. This is terrifying. Like, Cam Ward, I'm so scared for him on Sunday. I really am.
Well, you know what? That's something I want to ask BK about, too, because we talked a little bit about Cam this last week. And I thought – there were obviously some plays where, like, the coverage was – or protection was terrible. You know, no chance. I thought he looked really skittish in the pocket on sometimes when the pocket actually was fine, which to me it's like that's one of two things probably, right? Like if there's a big picture seeing ghosts that's going to plague him, that's not good. I just know that Hines Allen is going to kill either of my guys, and so I know in the back of my mind that guy is a problem, so I'm – which is still you don't want, but like that would be more – like, that would be more, okay, it's a one-game thing or whatever, which, of course, then you would think you'd probably see that
this
week.
It'd be a two-game thing.
Either way, yeah, you'd see that this week for sure. But, I mean, I don't know. I just thought that was one of the most maybe the most disappointing thing to me about his performance was that I think he's been really good standing in there, and sometimes he's run himself into sacks and stuff, but I just thought he was kind of, you know, anticipating stuff that wasn't happening yet. Now, you don't want to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bad performance all around from him. People complained, like, oh, he's throwing short. Like, they took the deep out of him. Nobody was open. You know, and again, and Isle Manor comes back and is just awful. You know, they were out of sync. They couldn't connect. Then the fourth down pass, he drops. I do think he was anticipating pressure, like, earlier than it got there, but it was getting there.
And yeah, I mean, the pocket collapsed plenty too.
Yeah, and he didn't do – he had done better the three previous weeks, kind of negotiating his way out of that, running. He only ran once in this game. It just was a mess. And then, you know, I think he's been terrific at kind of talking about it and dealing with it, being therapeutic. In the way he's been steady and all of that, you know, in the face of the same issues over and over and over. But then he said, you've got to lose to win, which is nonsensical. And I want to ask him about that. There have been a lot of guys who haven't had to lose to win. Now, I understand their infrastructure.
They didn't join this team.
Right. Their infrastructure and scaffolding have been better. But you don't have to lose to win.
You do here. I think you're taking that. He is absolutely right here. You came to a place that's going to lose. So if you're going to win, you're gonna do this first, right?
Take your lumps, kid.
Yeah.
We'll have more with PK coming up next.
Yeah,
take
leave
your
him
thoughts.
Alone, PK.
615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com with us here on the program. So, PK, I want to get your thoughts on a question that we threw out there yesterday. Take this thing back to the beginning of the year. We all, I think, had reserved expectations for the Titans, right? Like, I mean, people picked them to win, you know, four games, five games, six games, somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, every now and then you run across somebody crazy that was like, oh, they could beat eight or nine games, and Cam Ward's going to take them to playoffs in their first year. But by and large, I think expectations were measured. I think you saw a concerted effort from Borgonzi and Brinker. They never wanted to get into, like, the win total stuff or competing for the playoffs. All they ever talked about
Super Bowl.
Was
– They were asked about the Super Bowl.
They did. They were asked about that.
Too bad you didn't ask that question, PK, sitting there on your ass.
Yeah. I did pass on that one.
So, but, I mean, the only thing they ever really committed to was, you know, we just want to see improvement. That's all they said. So, here we are later, they're 1-11. Cam Ward's numbers are on track to be for a number one overall pick that is playing as much football as he's going to end up playing here. Some of the worst that we've seen, just in terms of, like, he's going to end up, like, he's on pace for 10 touchdown passes and 9 picks right now, which is kind of hard to do in a 17-game NFL season.
9 picks is pretty good.
9 picks, not bad. The 10 touchdown pass is kind of hard to do in the NFL when you're a starting quarterback for a 17-game pace.
Yeah.
So my question is, like, if you would have told – I think Borgonzi and Brinker had an idea that this team was not good. If you would have told them before the year that it looked this bad, what do you think they would have said? And now that they've seen that, how do you react to that if you're Borgonzi in terms of trying to figure out, boy, we got a lot more work to do around here than maybe I thought heading into all this?
Well, if I'm them, the first big concern I have is Amy. Amy has not been particularly patient lately. Now, she's got a coach to hire, so that should occupy her time. But who knows who's whispering in her ear about what. So my first concern is, you know, this is going to take some time. She said she's going to be patient. You know, when's my phone going to ring with her changing her mind about that?
It's a valid concern.
I think people should be concerned that you just said that it's going to occupy her time hiring the coach. I mean, I think most people, fans would be like, can you please just, like, send her, like, a bio of the coach that they just hired?
Can
you sign this, please?
Yeah, come in, have a cup of coffee with him for 20 minutes and say, yeah, that's our guy. I'm on board. And then go back to Waller or your horses here or whatever. Look, everybody agrees.
Fox hunting.
Everybody agrees that her being uninvolved in this coaching hire would be the healthiest thing for the franchise. I don't foresee it. But that would be terrific. I mean, Brinker and Borgonzi have to accelerate the pace somehow. They have to free agent shop better than Cody Barton, right? I don't know who they were bidding against for Cody Barton, who was a journeyman making, you know, not that much money.
Remember when Ernest Jones was here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's doing okay.
They were scared of the Ernest Jones cost. Borgonzi wasn't involved in this when they shipped him out. But Ernest Jones isn't making that much more money than Cody Barton. And he is a superior player to Cody Barton. That scares me a little bit on personnel judgment, right? And on price estimation. So they've got to really kill it in free agency because there's only so much they can do in the draft. Hopefully they can trade in the draft and get people. Hopefully they get a culture builder coach. There's a lot at stake in the next 6 months for the Tennessee Titans. And Borgonzi hopefully is leading the charge, but we don't even know that much about Borgonzi yet. I mean, I just mentioned Cody Barton. It's not like they hit it out of the park with the free agent class. The draft looks pretty good, but, I mean, we were scoring Io Manor high. When Io Manor's disappeared into somebody that doesn't look like more than a fourth wide receiver next year now.
Yep.
So, you know.
Oladejo, still part of that draft class.
Oladejo, you know, I think could reemerge to play a couple games here, which would be good for him to get some more experience. I wouldn't expect him to come out and ring up a bunch of sacks, but it'd be good for him to go into the offseason off some work.
And Cam Ward also was the first-round pick, by the way.
Yeah, he was. That's true.
The top pick.
I mean, I still see promise in Cam Ward. I think we're all together and not writing him off yet, but he's going to have a hell of an offseason.
But if you're Borgonzi, to Robbie's question, I mean, do you think it – do you think right now, as he looks at things, it's markedly worse than he expected, even going into the season when obviously they were
muted? I think it has to be.
Muted.
I think he thought it was bad, but certainly it's worse at this stage than he imagined. And I think it has to feel a little bit – I mean, there's got to be nights when he drives home from the facility feeling a little overwhelmed.
Daunting is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a daunting task that's in front of him.
32 jobs, and you got to take one, but boy, sometimes because they're tough jobs,
you know,
man.
As I talked about yesterday, a lot of things that we either assumed or expected to happen this year in terms of their growth, J.C. Latham was a big part of that. Well, I don't know. I don't have the first clue about what he's going to be. I'm not feeling good about it right now. Sweat, Simmons together up the middle, that was supposed to be a strength. Well, Simmons is a big-time strength. Is Sweat, like, what's Sweat doing?
What is
Sweat
he
has
doing?
Four tackles.
Has Sweat done anything?
Four tackles the last 2 weeks. No pressure.
I mean, is he even going to be on the team next year?
Man.
And here we are. As
so that's
a market,
what I'm saying. It's
as
just,
a market.
That was the strength.
You know, as a market, you look back, Robinson's things are still hurting them. And then those are Rand's top two picks.
Yeah.
I mean, can you get to a point where the last guy isn't killing you? Still a ways off, which is unbelievable. But teams dig out. Like the first full season of Malarkey was a significant turnaround to 9 wins. It happens.
With a right tackle at number 8, with a center signed in the offseason, with an offensive line that they figured a way to turn from awful to pretty good. It's football, like, right? So we're not doing draft talk. We're not doing Ed's on here like talking about, and I'm not going to get into Ed's yelling at you like you got to draft an offensive lineman. But one way or the other, if you don't fix the offensive line, and it could just be Hope Latham, some culture coach in Latham. I mean, I'm not saying write him off, but I'm just saying if the offensive line isn't markedly better, how much better is anything going to be? You can draft a receiver. They need to do that. How much better is anything going to be if you still are a bottom 10, bottom 5 offensive line?
Well, I'll be devil's advocate here. But say the offensive line is largely what it is. Maybe Slater replaces Zeitler, you know, and you retain some of the depth. Third tackle, Hance comes back healthy. You retain that. I didn't feel terrible about the depth. You know, considering context of the league. But you get a receiver that he could get the ball to quickly, like in the, you know, Burrow Chase kind of thing. You know, a reduced.
Yeah, just get a Jamar Chase.
A reduced level of Burrow Chase. And you have an edge rusher who will occasionally, you know, force a fumble, sack fumble. And you've got a corner that'll intercept the ball periodically. I mean, can't all those things help alleviate some of the offensive line stuff, too?
Well, and how much better – yes, it can. How much better does Cam get – because we talked about this yesterday. The offensive line's bad. Everybody recognizes that. Cam also, on his own, has run himself into a lot of sacks this year. So does he get markedly better at that? And how much does that help?
I also think, like, you know, using Vandy kind of as an example, Cam's not Pavia by any means. In the way he plays. But when Cam, over those 3 games, started running around a little bit more and created a few more plays from running around and then ran 3 or 6 times, I'll take a sack or two in exchange for the plays that he's making. So if he can do that more, if they could build more of that into his game, you know, he seems to be pretty good at not getting – I know it only takes one play, right? He doesn't feel beat up to me. Maybe there's more of that than is showing up. I don't think that's a part of the reason that he's not playing well. It's not like, oh, that shoulder's really bothering him and he's throwing poorly.
Yep.
None of that has shown up. Maybe that's just good luck. But I think – he can take some sacks in exchange for those plays if they can get him in a place where he's making more of those plays.
That's fine. I don't disagree. But you got to show me the team in this league that's worth a crap that has 2 bad tackles ever.
I mean, Cincinnati got to a Super Bowl with 2 bad tackles.
You want them to draft an offensive lineman high?
I'm not talking about the draft. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like the whole picture for them. I still think the offensive line has to be like, and the problem is free agency is limitations of what it can do for you. But I'm just saying, like, you better know what you're going to get with Latham or figure him out / sign whatever you can, and then you might be relegated to. You know, I think that, especially with Cam, because yes, he runs himself into sacks, all that stuff. I agree, but if you don't give him any sort of security where he feels like he's going to be protected, then I think his play will continue to suffer.
The biggest mystery about this team over the last 2 years to me is Bill Callahan. How did Bill Callahan get bad? And If he gets hired somewhere next year, which the question is, does he want to work next year? If he wants to work next year, I can't wait to see
best offensive line in the league. What it'll guarantee?
Yeah, does the magic come back?
I mean, Treylon Burks looks like Odell Beckham out there right now.
Does the magic come back for him? And did he mysteriously have 2 years here where it just disappeared, or was it the beginning of him falling off a cliff?
I have one more segment with PK coming up next. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com with us here on the program. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do you care about the Cam Ward versus Shedeur Sanders storyline heading into this game?
One.
I figured that may be the case.
If you don't want to be shell-shocked with nonsense about that, PaulKuharski.com is your spot this
now we're
week.
Talking.
Are people hitting that hard this week? Is that all the rage?
I think it's floating a little bit under the radar, given the fact that the Titans are as bad as they are.
I'm sure it will come. I think the Myles Garrett stuff is far more interesting and will be probably far more impactful. But look, if Shedeur Sanders beats, you know, if the Browns beat the Titans this weekend, when the Browns beat the Titans this weekend, that doesn't make Shedeur Sanders better than Cam Ward.
It means he should have been the number one overall pick. That's it.
There you go.
That's what it means.
Feed the idiots their steak.
Rex Road loved him anyway. He was your guy.
Well, I like him better than Cam Ward. I want it for the record. I did not like either of them for the number one overall pick. So I do want that on the record. I mean, Shedeur
Sanders still maintain he should have gone ahead of Cam Ward, despite the fact that the league passed on him for plus rounds.
Well, yeah, but we know why that. He completely botched the process. As a player, yeah, his on-target throw percentage was actually tremendous, like better than some of the quarterbacks that went high in previous drafts and easily the best of last year's class. And that, to me, is what I value. We'll see if he can, you know, figure out some of the other stuff. But he screwed up the draft process.
I am not nearly as cocky as Rex Road to think that I know better than 32 football teams. And I trust that the league assessed him in a fair way. He screwed up the draft process, yes. But if there's a talented quarterback there, somebody is going to say, well, he screwed up the draft process, but he's a pretty talented quarterback and I need a talented quarterback. I'm going to go ahead and take him.
Okay.
And they did him.
Okay, so again, that's fine. But you know that draft rankings are all fed also. These guys, they're fed by personnel people. I mean, that's anybody who's doing these. Yeah, it's their own evaluation. They watch film. They also talk to a ton of people.
Right. So 32 went against their draft rankings for four rounds because they didn't like how he handled the process?
Yes.
Wow.
It was that bad.
That's tremendous.
If you think someone's coming in and is going to take a blowtorch to your locker room, then yeah, that matters, dude. You don't think so? So tell me what, as a talent, he was. Just as a talent.
I think he's not as talented as you think.
I think that he was a low first, high second talent. What do you think? Give me a number. Be specific.
I think he's probably a third round talent.
Oh, okay. Well, so now that two rounds is okay.
Well, it was early in the fifth, right? So,
okay.
Round and a half.
All right.
By the way, his completion percentage right now is 50.8.
Yeah.
Got to come up.
It does have to come up.
Probably will this week.
This guy says he makes all the
throws. Oh, no. There's no bad situation with the Cleveland offense. Hey, let me tell you something. I bet you the Titans defense looks okay this week because they're playing the Cleveland offense, which doesn't matter who's at quarterback this year if you haven't noticed. You're turning me into like a big Shedeur defender. I think he's talented. I think that he could end up being, you know, an effective QB in this league. But we'll see.
I also think, separately of what I think of him as a quarterback, I think it's okay for teams to pass on pains in the ass.
Well, right, but you're trying to minimize that as a factor. That is the factor. I mean, the stuff that, yeah, we don't need to rehash the whole draft process, but, like, that's absurd how much he dropped. It's not because people were that far off on his talent.
We'll see in time.
No, it's not we'll see.
Yeah, it is.
No,
we'll
it's
see.
Not we'll see. Plenty of, no, but
why is dude, it not Ryan, we'll see? He's got to write a resume.
Was Ryan Leaf a talented quarterback or not? Did he have all the tools to be an incredible NFL? Yes, he did. What happened to Ryan Leaf? I guess he had no talent then in the draft process. Come on. Terrible logic on your part. Terrible.
Part of being talented is putting yourself in position to use your talent.
Okay, that's Robbie, this is stupid. Tell him
this is going perfectly.
This is absolutely you're just trolling everybody right now.
Is Anthony Richardson talented?
Very.
Well, I need him to be competent enough to get on the field to show me his talent. Otherwise, his being talented does nothing for my team.
But see, Anthony Richardson, the knock on him was accuracy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's most important at quarterback?
Yeah, accuracy and decision making.
Okay. Great.
I don't know what you just won there.
You made no sense in that entire segment. No sense at all.
PK, thank you.
Have fun rooting for Shador for your life. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
That's going to do it for us today on the program. Next man up with Jake Lyman coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Joe likes Hendon Hooker.